It's your all-out cricket pod blast. There he is. It's Alex O'Dell. How are you feeling, Al?
I'm feeling pretty good. Thanks, Ross.
I've got some questions for you later. We've got just a few talking points to put together here. Just shuffle the cards here.
Can I do an anecdote?
Some talking, but already? We haven't even introduced Joe Harmon.
Hello, Ross.
How are you, Joe?
Don't let me get in the way of Alex's anecdote.
God, no.
Oh, my God. Well, just before anecdote, let's say hello to Phil Walker.
Hello.
How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing fine.
Good, isn't he?
Anecdote time.
Oh, here it comes.
On the way here, I was stuck at a London junction in rush hour, a number of people around, and a couple of ladies that knew each other just in front of me, and they were heading over to the hospital nearby. It's quite busy. And one of them turns to the other and just says, I've been meaning to tell you for a while, and quite loudly in front of everyone, I've been meaning to tell you for a while, I don't know if it's the right time and everything, but I just wanted to say that you have lost so much weight.
That's nice, isn't it? And what a lovely...
And everybody at the junction went, just turned around to look at the woman who had lost all that weight. And the reason I tell this anecdote is in part because I found it amusing at the time, but also, Ross, you're wearing a very tight T-shirt.
I'm wearing a very tight T-shirt.
And Ross, I just want
to
say...
I don't know if it looks like I've lost weight.
I don't know if this is the right time, but I just wanted to say...
Yeah.
You have lost so much weight.
You have. Oh, thank you.
Well done, Ross.
I've just been eating. That's the only way I've achieved it, just by eating and drinking this Guinness.
It's counterintuitive, but it might work.
I played on Saturday and played against an old fella who I played against many, many years ago. And he said, all right, Phil, you've lost weight. First thing he said to me. And it's meant to be a nice thing. It just makes me feel crushed.
It does somehow.
I'm kind of defined by my body.
By your weight.
You have a bit.
No, I have, yeah. But let's kind of move on from that.
Joe,
it's not like I've ever been a bloater.
Exactly. That's what it feels like. It feels like a judgment on the rest of your life.
I tell you what,
a compliment for now.
Just to square the circle, Joe, you're looking pretty slim. Aren't you too?
Well, actually, that's what my mum said when I came
back. Really? Did you say that?
She did say, she told the whole family that I've got a lot skinnier.
That's very good.
They were kind of pleased. To a point.
I prefer slimmer. Skinny is like an insult, isn't it?
It is.
It's just a little. Listen, let's talk about...
Cricket,
the Ashes. First question goes for you, Al. I've got on this card written here...
Are we jumping straight into Ashes questions?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, this is it. This is the format the whole show's going to take, Al.
Okay.
Here we go. We win. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, everybody come around. Mambo number 5. We've won the Ashes, Al.
I know.
How does it feel?
It feels pretty good because we haven't had a podcast since we won the Ashes. So we definitely have to head up the show, as you're quite right, by going, hey, we won the Ashes.
We won the Ashes because I could feel there will be misery, listeners. Don't you worry. That's what the last test was for. But we've got to celebrate, haven't we? I realised the other day I hadn't celebrated winning the Ashes properly. So I put on 10 cc's, I don't like cricket, or what's it, it's actually called dreadlock holiday. Mm-hmm. And I just danced around. What did you do to celebrate, Al?
When we won the Ashes, I read Phil Walker's wonderful article about the first day of the Ashes, which, listener, if you haven't read it, you know, it's out of date, you missed it. And, I just generally felt pretty pleased about it. Joe, the Ashes, the win. Some wise man... I can't, for the life of me, recall who it is, predicted 3-2.
Well, I was just left thinking, who could possibly have predicted this victory? And possibly even the scoreline. And then I remembered that I did.
You did.
On this very show.
July the 7th.
And, it's written on the website as well. You'll find it up there. 3-2. Ignore my other predictions. They're irrelevant. But the score prediction, 3-2, is there. And
absolutely right.
I put some money on it as well. So I made a few quid.
Did you put money on 3-2?
Yeah, I did.
How much did you win?
Well, I only put a fiver on, which I'm regretting now, because obviously when you know you win the bet, you wish you'd put more on. Yeah. But I won 85 quid.
That's gamble good. Aware.
That should have been more, I think, for that.
But if you're good, it's fine. If you're good at gambling, it's okay.
Quote, I reckon they've got a great chance. The Aussie batting lineup looks shaky. They've lost their best bowler before a ball's been bowled, and it looks like they're going to pick Shane Watson. Plus, and I don't know if anyone else has mentioned it, they're old, like really old. England to take it 3-2. Joe Harmon, July the 7th, 2015. That's my best Joe Harmon impression.
Very good. That was absolutely super.
Soothsayer work by Joey H there. Outrageous. I said 2-2. Also put some money on 2-1 England. It just doesn't stack up, though, does it, really?
No.
Joey also had the good grace to go away for all of the Oval, knowing full well that England had already won the game.
Well, I missed the World Cup. Decided to go to Asia for the World Cup, but obviously not to watch any cricket. And missed the Oval Test.
Don't worry, 11 England players miss the Oval Test.
That's what I was asked earlier, Alex, didn't you? Does it take the sheen off it? Does it take the glow?
Well, can I get the question exactly right? Because, you know, we prepared this thing, listener.
Go on.
Was there any significance to the result at the Oval, Phil?
I think so, yeah.
Smash it.
I think it was actually possibly quite useful to remind us just how fragile they are.
Yeah, hubris. Is that a word? That
oh, no, we're not using that word. We're not using the H word anymore.
Did they avoid hubris?
The most popular cricket media word.
They de-hubris.
Did they? No, I thought Farbrace gave a really, really good interview, I think, morning of the final day, and he said, yeah, we just haven't had any edge. You know, we've already won it. You know, when push comes to shove, in that kind of cab driver style that he's got. I like Farbrace, as I've said before. And he said, yeah, we just didn't have the edge. Didn't have any edge when push comes to shove. And it's true, and yet quite refreshing to hear that somebody would come out and say that from the inner sanctum. I think that's probably true. I don't think that they were complacent necessarily, but I think when all is said and done, the party took place at Trent Bridge, and the celebrations, there's a finality to those celebrations, you know, and it's easy saying it now with hindsight, but looking back, England were always going to just fail to turn up, really, at the Oval. And for Australia, there was a lot riding on it. You know, there's legacies there. There are farewells. There are players desperate to playing for their careers. Siddle was inspired, you know, having taken, I think, 4 wickets beforehand in the whole tour.
Yep.
But bowled very well, apparently.
You wouldn't know. You were on a beach.
apparently he bowled very well on the tour without taking wicket.
Yeah. Joe, are you going to say apparently after everything you say about that game?
Because he has. It's all reported.
Can I defer to the host on this?
Yes.
Is now the time for my overwrought analogy between coaching England at the Oval and potty training, or does that come later?
All right, later.
Later.
Okay.
We'll leave it for later. If we get time. No, listen, there are a few little issues floating like satellites around this game. We did discuss people that had a lot to play for. A lot of people saying, if the BBC text is to be believed for one, Steve Smith, what a load of rubbish. Joe Root's the best batsman in the world. Steve Smith have ended comfortably as the top run scorer in the series. Joe Harmon, what do we say about the overall Aussie performance? They got beat. Boy, did they get beat. But they've still got some good players in there, haven't they?
Well, it really goes to show, didn't it, when Smith got runs. They won 2 tests. When he didn't, they lost 3 and lost them badly. I mean, that's a flaky batting order they've got, and he shored it up at times and wasn't able to at other times. Just shows those wickets, when we got Smith early, just how big those wickets were. Mm-hmm. I don't know, I mean, Australia will be massively disappointed to come here and think they were going to win a series and go away losing it. But actually, in retrospect, I think England are the better side in these conditions, definitely the 11 that are out there.
Well, Phil, I'll put this to you. It's about the Aussie future. I've got written down here, if Mitchell Marsh, Adam Voges and Ashton Agar are the answer, what's the question?
Well, are they gonna kind of settle for mediocrity, or are they going to kind of develop themselves again and become the team that they once were?
I think all of you have lost your minds. I've got a note here. Not everyone can have a note. I've got a note.
I don't have a note.
Steve Smith said, when Australia play as well as they can, England won't come close.
Yeah.
He was absolutely right. The moment Australia played as well as they possibly could, England were terrible. Excuse me.
That's Steve Smith on the phone.
In the style of Benedict Cumberbatch doing Hamlet. Excuse me, there's a phone ringing. There's a phone ringing. Turn it off.
Were you there that night?
No, I don't go to the theatre. I do the peep show thing on the theatre, you know, when they sit there and they go, oh, I wish I was watching TV. Mm. Although there are exceptions, the ones who... Oh, no,
don't say that to the actor, Ross Armstrong.
Well, Ross, in all fairness to Ross, he really recommends some good stuff.
I do.
Most of it is he's in it.
Listen, let's move on from this. We've discussed their future. They're in trouble, aren't they?
But can I come back to the future?
They haven't got that many Back to the Future.
I need to go Back to the Future, which is that... I know this is terrible. I still think Australia are much better than England. I just think Australia played as badly as they possibly could have played in 3 of these games. Like unbelievably, mind-bogglingly, gobsmackingly badly.
But then how badly did England play in the 2 games they lost?
Really badly. Okay, so badly.
That doesn't suggest Australia are a better side. It just shows both sides play very well and very badly.
I know what you mean, but I feel like Australia playing at their best is still better than England playing at their best. And I know that that doesn't make any sense, but I feel it, and my feelings are real, and I'm entitled to them. Can I also say about Mo, just to give you a snap picture as to how completely awful, I was watching one of the rare weekend days, you know, during the test match, and Moeen Ali, you know, the rain is coming. It is forecast for noon, and just before the rain comes, he took an absolute meaty swipe at Mitch Johnson outside off, and I thought, that's a bit odd, but sometimes Mitch Johnson can do that to you. Mm. But then off Nathan Lyon, he tried to clear him as the rain was falling out of the stand for six, and I thought, that is the most insane cricket I've seen mediocrity before, but I have never seen seppuku. Mm. In cricketing form.
What is seppuku?
It's when you jab an enormous sword into your stomach, into your intestines, and then pull it downwards through your intestines so they spill out in front of
you. Well, that's what both sides did repeatedly. I mean, there were no... You think of the great Ashes series about the changing moments. There were no moments. There were no moments in which the game swung wildly between two teams. Can you think of any moments?
No, and that was one of the most regrettable parts of the series. It almost became quite... Oh, kind of tired by the end of it. That you, it's an overused word in sport, but you look for a bit of fight, you look for a bit of, you know, some balls, and you got nothing. Whoever won the first two sessions of a five-day game would go ahead and win the game, and win the game comfortably. The kind of the ebbs and flows and the peaks and troughs of Test cricket is what makes it great, etc., etc. You just didn't get any of that, and that was frustrating. And so you had this bizarre scenario where it looks like a really close series, and then within it, and I know you didn't want to talk about this, Alex, you have five ridiculous one-sided games.
Yeah. I thought it was like a science experiment. You know, when you take if you're trying to find an allergy on someone, you just make them eat everything and remove one thing. And I felt like it was like an allergy experiment. They were like, we're going to take Test cricket, we're going to have everything in it, except for any resilience. And, and what we learnt from that experiment is it's not satisfying Test cricket.
Are the modern players, do they lack resilience? Do they know when they're under the cosh and just give up?
I think it's more forgivable in that England lineup when you think how kind of callow they are as a Test side. Mm. But you look at that Australia side, and they should have had more of a backbone. Having Voges in there in the middle order...
Yeah.
They have experienced players in there who didn't do the jobs they meant to. I think England have got more of an excuse. You can say they've got players who are still learning. Butler's quite a good example. He just didn't look like he knew whether to stick or twist in this series. I think he had the lowest strike rate of all England's batsmen. And Swan said, like, if you're a spinner coming on to Butler and you know he's not going to play any of the shots that can hit you out of the attack, which he seemed intent on not doing, then that's a massive relief to you.
Mm. Can I tell you something else Swan said? He said that both sides during the series were red hot or ice cold. And I thought, that's really sexy.
Yeah, did he?
He made it like unbelievably sexy. Red hot or ice cold. Mm.
In a kind of 80s movie.
Which do I want to be?
Neither. Don't worry about it.
You don't have to worry about it.
There is a question about England going forward, though, isn't there? Because since the turn of this summer, after the horrors of the World Cup, everybody's decided, right, well, the way to go is just to throw your hat up in the air and see what happens and score at 4 or 5 and over. But you can't do that in the UAE. You can't do that against teams with 2 or 3 spinners. You can't do that in South Africa either. And these Test matches are coming up. So there is a big question about the makeup of their team now, the lineup, and where you want light and shade within that lineup. Gary Balance, I think, will probably come back into the team. Certainly, he'll come back into the squad for the UAE, and he may well come back into the team at 5. Bairstow may be the one to miss out. I mean, he's a fine player, and he's played brilliantly, as we know, this year. But can you, from the moment that the second wicket goes down, just have a bunch of dashes all the way through to number 9? I'm not sure that is really the way that you win Test match cricket consistently.
Especially when you think back to UAE last time. We had Morgan at 5, didn't we? Who looked utterly clueless and tried to hit his way out of trouble, then tried to block his way out of trouble and couldn't do it. And I think you've just got to have batsmen in there who are prepared to bat time and that to be their natural game, not for them to be doing something they're not familiar with.
We're talking about technique, Ross. Maybe we need a little break.
You want a little break?
We're going to come back to some jazz technique.
Jazz technique. Let's do it.
Welcome to part 2, listener. We're going to keep talking about the Ashes. Do you know what? If I was England coach at the end of this Ashes series, and I was at my current workplace. I would probably call people in for interim performance conversations.
Mm.
But I was thinking, actually, that's a bit too adult. I was struck by the fact that the way this test series played out, particularly at the Oval, was enormously like potty training. So can I expand on this analogy?
You can. This is, you're halfway through a beautiful monologue. I won't interrupt you.
Halfway? I'm barely started.
So you're halfway.
So this is for the parents out there. I have a child who's gone through potty regression recently. It means they start using a potty and then they suddenly decide, no, I'm going to poo and shit everywhere. And that's potty regression. And I felt like the Oval was a kind of form of potty regression. And the thing about potty regression is you, negative attention, a toddler loves it. So if you're like, don't poo on the floor, well, they will take that over being ignored. So they start pooing on the floor because they want the positive attention. So what you have to do is just ignore the shit on the floor. And then if they manage to poo on the potty, just be super positive about it. And I thought, that's basically Trevor Bayliss in a nutshell, isn't it? They do anything awful. It's like, well, you know, brush over it very quickly. The moment it's positive, this is absolutely fantastic. It's absolutely brilliant. And all the while he's saying it's brilliant, there's an England player in the middle of the Oval taking an enormous runny shit in the middle of the carpet, you know what I mean? And that's the way I felt about the Oval. It was like potty training.
Although, oddly, after the defeat at Lords, he did say he was going to smack their bottoms.
Yeah.
So he's obviously changed his stance on parenting.
Yeah, yeah.
He's realised that negativity is not working.
Yeah.
But, and
yeah,
well done. I mean, parents are learning just as cricket coaches are.
That's right. Just reinforce the positivity and just brush past the negativity. Except for, Adam, I've got to say, Live got pretty shanked in the old post.
Well, here is a question for you, Phil. What is Adam Lythe?
Adam Lythe is a small, sweet, pudgy Alan Shearer lookalike.
Yes.
Who scored fewer runs in a 5-Test Ashes series than anyone since 1910 or something like that.
I thought it was this or the last century.
Wow.
Right, maybe even further back, maybe even 1800s.
Yeah,
so kind of 80-odd, 90-odd rounds or something.
Yeah.
And I felt for him. I felt for him when I was watching the celebrations, because he seemed to be mucking in. And, you know, you've made the point, Alex, that he's in the huddle, you know, when they do the celebrations.
Yeah. Takes his catches.
But that must be really hard, because he knows in his heart of hearts, right, well, okay, I might come back maybe one day if I score loads of runs, but for the minute, I'm done. I'm finished here.
Do you think Ian Bell felt that way in 20?
That must be really, really hard to stomach, I think.
It's different though, isn't it? Bell must have felt a bit though in 05, but Bell was the start of something.
Something.
He was still young enough, whereas Lyde, at this stage, you've got to say it's probably the end
and he's still scored 250s.
He's got a Facebook page that he updates, and we get these emails through after every test match, and it's kind of, did you get these as well?
Yeah, Phil? I get them.
It's just, Lyde says he's hoping for runs.
Yeah, it reminds me of runs. When I was.
Lyde says he wished he'd scored more runs. Lyde says he's good enough to play test cricket, but he hasn't got enough runs, and just leave Facebook alone. I feel like that with a lot of people, particularly
it's the folly of signing up an England player at the start of an Ashes series, just as we did with Finney and Carberry for the tour down under last
and
time
round. Trott as well.
And Trott is well.
Actually,
God,
we should stop
tour.
Doing this.
Yeah, let's just not do it ever again.
It's the curse of AMC.
At least with Ravi, we knew he wasn't going to play.
Sanger's doing all right, though.
Yeah, Sanger, that's kind of a safe bet.
He got 18 in his final innings. It was your fault.
He's in credit, though,
I'd say. He's got a few runs before that.
The question with Lyde, or rather the question with the opening bat, is who comes in his stead, and I can't imagine really that they're going to have the guts to take him and open him in the UAE. And so, what the options are? Weirdly, Mo Ali seems to be not quite so radical an idea. And
Bayliss
I know
has mentioned it.
Yeah, you must have read the blog that I wrote a few weeks ago, folks, where I advocated it. Probably unlikely, but it seems like obviously a stopgap, but not as crazy an idea as it may appear on paper. It will enable them to get two spinners in and keep the formation of the team.
It's fine, isn't it? A stopgap is fine. I mean, you pay two spinners in Asia. Why shouldn't you
bang
have,
on?
Why shouldn't
that's
you
my
have
thing. That's my thing.
Well, I've got on this
the
card.
People's choice, of course, is Alex Hales.
It's true. I've got Alex Hales, Moeen Ali or Gary Balance are about to be asked to open the batting for England. One of them will be. Is it a bit like asking a bloke at the office to be the best man at your wedding just because you've been talking about it so much while they've been around that you'd feel guilty if you didn't?
Yeah, you
he's not
lied.
Really the bloke you would pick. None of them are the guy you would pick.
Alex Hales made a great speech, didn't he? Great best man speech on the day that Alex Hales fluffed Adam Lythe fluffed his lines, because he made 180-odd on the day that Lythe completed that ugly record of being the lowest ever scorer in an Ashes series. So He is the people's choice. He is. I would say probably the next in line.
Yeah.
I'm uncomfortable with it. I have to be honest about that. But
you're going to enjoy my next suggestion. Nobody, and I do
no,
not.
Well, nobody.
I do not understand
nobody
this.
Cook.
But nobody is talking. Not for the opening spot. But nobody is talking about Borthwick, and the man averages 25. With the ball in Test match cricket and bats at three.
In Test match cricket, he did only play one game.
I don't give a shitting balls.
He averaged 25.
The fucking stats are there. Borthwick needs to go. They're talking about Ansari. They're talking about freaking Treadwell.
Have we got Borthwick's first class bowling stats up for
the first class on his batting is pretty
batting
good.
Is,
these
I mean,
days.
He's a really, really good top order county cricket.
I had a look actually the other day. He doesn't even really bowl.
He doesn't
even
really bowl
even in August.
They don't
the
bowl him. They don't bowl him at Durham.
No.
Then he's the new Steve Smith, isn't he?
That's one.
Yeah.
Thing.
Okay. That's the reason.
That's one reason to get him.
We've got white line fever, don't we? We're supposed to be talking about the Ashes. We won the Ashes, and then we were, you know, royally shat on. And all we can talk about is the UAE. Our hearts are in Dubai already. It's very
odd. Progressive thinkers. We can't just rest on our laurels.
And also, you know, fed up of the Ashes. Been loads of it.
There have been loads of it.
Thank the Lord, 2017 is the next time that we actually
we'll
play
so
this.
We'll be so excited about that next Ashes.
My wife, who does
we
not
can
follow
do 25
cricket,
25 podcasts
again,
in the building.
Again, every time.
Mm-hmm.
We started this podcast with All Out Cricket, but just before the 2013 Ashes.
True.
So we've been doing it for just over 2 years. We're in a three Ashes series already.
You know, was your language always as bad before you?
It was
abominable.
It's really things have really changed tonight, Al. You've got the devil in you, you've got a really sweary mouth.
He's got red wine in him. I think that's.
He's got a bit of red wine, but listen to this. It's about the batting order again. It's about the UAE as we look onwards. How would you like Ian Bell to disappoint you next? By starting in the team and being very bad, or by being left out for a while, then coming into the team and then being very bad?
Can we have a jazz break on that?
Let's do it.
He may or may not retire. Ian Bell. If he's going to retire, I think we should be first to talk about the impact of his retirement.
Well, we will be because I don't think many people are talking about it but you. So, I don't, you know... I
don't think he'll retire.
I don't think
he'll
retire.
He likes cricket too much.
So what has he said? What has he said specifically?
He's just going to reflect on his position. But I've interpreted that as he's going to retire and front BT Sport's new Ashes coverage because he's such a charismatic man. Joe Harmon, Ian Bell for you. What is he?
What is he?
Yeah, what is Ian Bell?
Because I don't understand him.
Philosophical.
He's an enigmatic, yet beautiful batsman who I think we all want to succeed. I think you quite want him to fail.
No, I want Bell to succeed.
Do you? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just he never does.
Do you?
Apart from that little bit.
There you go, because that's the anti-Bell feeling.
Yeah.
Because he does succeed quite a lot, doesn't he?
Yeah.
He's got a lot of runs for someone who... Has never succeeded.
I know.
He won us an Ashes series almost single-handedly. Yeah.
It's impressive to have burgled 116 test matches out of it.
Just for having a good cover drive. I mean, I think the UAE is a tough one. I mean, he had a shocker out there before as well, didn't he?
But he's a good player of spin. This is, and I don't mean that sarcastically. He is actually a good player of spin. But every time we go to UAE or India, we go Ian Bell.
But
is a good player of spin.
Technically, he's a good player of spin, but he does some ridiculous things.
Doesn't make any runs.
Going back to South Africa in 2009-10 when he left a straight one from Paul Harris. I mean, he does silly things against spin bowlers.
Yeah,
I think probably because he's got more time to think about it.
He's too good.
They obviously all the noise is coming from Bayliss, Cook, Strauss, so that they want Bell to go.
Yeah,
I'd be amazed if
go
Bell,
to the UAE. Then it's not.
I always think it's amusing when they say, "Oh, Bell with all his experience," you know, which is kind of shorthand for nous, grit, determination.
Yeah, it's not.
And then just Belly turns up, you know, with his fragile beauty. I love Ian Bell, always have for many, many, many years. For me, he will always have a place in my heart. He will always have delivered these innings and these moments that I will never forget. Yeah. He made a set of not out 70 at Adelaide in that horror tour where he hit four sixes when everyone else was collapsing, and he hit Mitchell Johnson for six twice over third man when he was bowling 93 mile an hour. And he walked off 70 not out. It's just the best innings I've ever seen in my life. And he went off with his uncomfortable, funny walk and his chuntering and swearing into his mouth strap.
His fake amazement of being out.
He's kind of sort of singed great memories onto my head that I'll never be able to shake and never will want to shake. But he's been incredibly frustrating this year. If you think that he went to the West Indies first test out there, made a masterful 140-odd, and it's been binary since then, apart from those two bizarre 50s that he made at Edgbaston. If he were to walk away now, which I agree with Joe, I don't think he will, then I think he'd be remembered as you know, the great stylist, great English stylist.
He's a Ted Dexter, isn't he?
Gower.
Ted Dexter,
without the completely bonkers posh period as chairman of selectors.
Yeah,
and, which is a shame. I'd like to come.
Ted had in his favour that he didn't really care very much. he'd be practicing his golf swing at first slip. Belly cares. If anything, Belly cares too much. There is something that's happening with Bell and his technique where he keeps missing these balls which appear that like they might be jaffers and might be absolute stunners. But then when you look at it in slow motion, he's just missing straight balls and he's missing them by quite a long way. And I don't know, he's played a lot of cricket. He was in the England team at 21. He's now, 32, 33? I wonder if maybe the time might be right for him to walk away, but he won't. And I have no problems with him.
If he walks
maybe
away,
maybe the time might be there.
If ought he to be replaced with his literal aesthetic opposite, which is James Taylor, who for every moment of grace from Bell, we will have an awkward heave from Taylor. But what we have in Taylor is a winner.
He is a winner. He is a winner. The theory of the winner
Except
is quite
he,
difficult
he
to...
Except consistently loses, doesn't he? You
yeah,
know?
I would pick him as a winner.
He's a fallen hero for me.
He feels like a winner. Yeah. The thing is, you know, my other question here I've got, if Mitchell Johnson is not a loser, why does he lose all the time? Because he's lost to England a number of times in a lot of series, but he's so good.
Except when he wins. But this is, I'll add other bizarre things about Australian bowlers. Somehow Hazelwood, who took 18 wickets to 25, apparently he was awful.
He did bowl badly a lot of the time, bowling too wide of off stump when there was a lot in the pitch for the bowler.
As does
you
Broad.
You can't just go on your stats.
No, you can't.
I know you've got a lot on your phone, but
you can't do anti-Broad sentiments either, because the way he bowled, you know, the majority of the series, almost the whole of the series.
Hazelwood was there, though, because Hazelwood looked excellent in the start of the series, just looked like he could put it exactly where he wanted to every time, and then it did fall apart a little bit for him.
Can I talk about Broad, because we have come on to him, and I was thinking about the particular ferocity of the Australian reaction to losing in Trent Bridge. And then I tried, for the first time ever, I put myself in Aussie shoes. And I suddenly realised that here is this public school educated, dad played for England, tall, blonde, good looking, bit metrosexual, and they don't like Michael Clarke for that reason, bloke. Hamming, no genuine intent in it at all. Complete disbelief at his own amazing brilliance as he runs with his hands over his mouth. And I thought, if I was Australian, or if this was reversed, it would be intolerable. Absolutely
you
intolerable.
You don't need to be Australian, Al, to have something against you abroad. But, no, that's...
to turn that spell into a bad thing. First of all, he was holding his mouth in amazement at Ben Stokes' catch.
Not his own ability.
How brilliant he was as a bowler.
It was faux. It was completely faux.
That reaction was completely genuine.
That was going to be my genuine moment of the action.
No.
You can't ruin it, before we've talked about it. You can't sully my dreams.
Surely, as the actor Ross Armstrong, you can recognise the work of another great actor in front of you. This is a man feigning disbelief, comically, self-referentially, ironically perhaps, but nevertheless, this is not genuine.
I think you've watched so many sports packages, you think men can feign things within 1.5 seconds. That slow-mo, maybe.
It's not sports packages, Ross, let me tell you. It's called Martins.
It's too quick for him to put on a theatrical reaction to it. It's a genuine reaction.
Is that your moment of the summer?
That is my moment of the summer.
Let's do moments of the summer.
I agree with you. Yeah? I agree with you wholeheartedly. I saw that one live.
The catch or the reaction? Catch, or that
I don't care about the reaction. That's just I get that it's hammy and theatrical, but that's sport. The catch, just it's beyond understanding that you could kind of grab it from halfway to third man. And then grab it back into the gully and somehow hold on to it. That was the moment of kind of jaw dropping brilliance of the summer for me. And my other moment, Cookie declared in that game.
What nine wickets down.
And there's a great moment if you're watching the Sky coverage. That they cut to the box and they're like, he's declared, and they're all just kind of looking around, trying to kind of figure out if that has actually happened.
Yeah, brilliant. The thing was, it wasn't really that outrageous.
It wasn't. I mean, they weren't going to. But it was the most conservative, non-conservative declaration that could see people.
But he still did it, didn't he?
Stephen Finn might as well have had a hammer and just been standing in the middle, beating himself in the head with it, because Mitchell Johnson was just peppering him ball after ball, and then he calls him off.
But you can't deny that would not have happened a couple of years ago. You know, day two, England have. True. Well ahead in the game, got millions of days left in that particular match, and he walked off. He's kind of said, you know what, let's have a bowl. That only a little thing, but to me, I thought that was a great little moment.
That was a great moment. Joe, have you got your abiding memory of this Ashes?
It'd be Finn's comeback. First test for, 2 years since the Ashes in 2013.
The 2-2, wasn't it? Those 2-2.
Yeah, the 2-2. And I mean, because it's... I was nervous for him. To be honest, I was glad he got a game, but I wasn't at all sure it was going to go well. He got big wickets, and then when he came on for that second spell in the afternoon, he just bowled so brilliant. I mean, every ball was beating the bat. It was like, I can't remember watching the West Indies bowling. England's batsmen just didn't look like they were anywhere near good enough to be playing them. And Finn was just doing it every other ball. Yeah. And it's just because I think we're never going to get to a level with Finn where he does it every other game. It's going to be 1 in 5, 1 in 10. But to see him do it is great. And England are such a better side when he's in there doing what he does. And they're a different side, I think, as well.
I want to believe that it's going to be more than 1 in 5. And I want to believe that he can now, over the next couple of years, reassert himself as one of the best fast bowlers around. I don't say that with any great confidence, but I do want to believe that massively. He is the ultimate rhythm bowler, Finn. You know, something happened to him at Edgbaston and it just clicked. And the run-up seemed smooth in the way that it's been jerky in the past, and he was just getting through the crease, getting through his action effortlessly. You know, and it looked like he was looking to bowl 80, 80, 81, and it was coming out 80, 87, 88 time after time. And as you say, he was hitting the seam time after time. He's not touched those heights since, and I think that is what you're going to get with Finney. But his strike rate speaks for itself. You know, his strike rate is... Terrific. He's taken 100 wickets now. It's 100 test wickets, and his strike rate is comparable to Wasim, Wacker, Malcolm Marshall, the greats of the great. So he has a way to take wickets.
My favourite moment of it... Switch Hit said this remarkable statistic. The most successful English batting partnership is Moeen and Broad.
Yeah.
And I've seen just by chance, because not very much of this has been on at the weekend, which means actually I've not watched very much of it live. I do sometimes wonder whether it left me slightly cold simply because I'm not watching.
No, you're just cold.
That's probably true. Yeah.
But Moeen, on a couple of occasions, I can't even pronounce the word. Is it insouciance? You know,
insouciance.
Where the ball whistles past his edge for two or three balls, and he just absolutely doesn't register it, and then exactly the same ball comes next and he just smashes it through the covers.
Yeah.
And you can see it absolutely infuriating them, but they can't sledge him. He's unsledgeable because he doesn't react. He doesn't care.
He's played two of the most important innings of the summer, without a doubt.
And we love
77 he made at Cardiff, when the game was in the balance, was brilliant, and people had kind of written him off in the build-up to this summer as well, ridiculously. And then the 50-odd he made at Edgbaston, with Broad, I think, at the other end, he made 30-odd. That was the innings that nailed that match. England only got 280 in response to 136. Yeah. That partnership, 80-odd, that nailed I wouldn't say the series, but that nailed that match, without a doubt.
And the bowling clearly needs a lot of work, and he's said so himself every time he's asked about his bowling. Mm. But there were, particularly at the start of the series, there were crucial wickets. He got out Smith and Clark. As I'm arguing with people on Twitter saying he's not a test bowler, what is a test bowler if you're not getting two of the best players to spin out in the world out?
I mean, Warner has scored more test runs since he came into test cricket than any other player on earth, and Mo Ali has taken the mickey out of him.
He's taken
just
12 wickets.
It's just his bunny.
I really, really enjoyed just favourite moments as well, and Warner Corner. Mm. I mean, David Warner's resurrection as a family man with his Instagramming on the mornings of games and the various healthy things he's doing. Just this complete turnabout. And I was, again, listening to Switch here the other day, they're not buying it. They're still anti-Warner. We've had a go at Warner in the past. But you know what? This guy deserves a second chance. He does.
He's great, everyone. He's, you know.
Him and Root have made up. So we need to make up with him.
When did they make up?
At the end of the game, they tweeted a picture of themselves with, like, boxing glove style fists together. All friends.
All mates.
It's been retweeted about 6,000 times. These are the times in which we live, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I punched you in a bar because I thought that you were making Islamophobic comments, which are completely indefensible. I resurrected those allegations just prior to the series. But now that we've done this photo, everything's fine in the world.
What a load of nonsense. Well, thank you for joining us, listeners, for an Ashes series, a fantastic Ashes series, and another All Out Cricket pod blast, more importantly. Just a few questions for you guys, very, very briefly, just your first thoughts. Looking forward to the ODI series, which we haven't mentioned so far. Joe Root is being rested. Who's going to score the runs?
Probably no one.
Probably no one, Alex.
James Taylor.
Joe?
Alex Hales.
Alex Hales. If that does happen, then we've got a new opener. If
Mo Ali. He might go back and open the batting or be up there.
Will he be opening the batting? Will he be opening the batting?
I'd like to see him back up the top somewhere.
Yeah, well, he did well, didn't he? But it's an interesting one.
Very, very interesting. And looking forward to the UAE, the most exciting thing about Alistair Cook's batting is he clearly isn't afraid to get out to spin. Is that a good thing? Going to the UAE.
Well, you've got to get out eventually to somebody, haven't you?
Do. You may as well be a spin bowler.
Got to say on Cook, love the fact that he got 80-odd last innings of the series, even though he had no reason to do it. He was obviously shattered, emotionally overwrought, and he still went out there and did what Cook did. What a lovely little touch.
Absolutely.
He's got a wavy eye and he's got loads of runs.
And looking even further to the future, Mason Crane. A lot of people are talking about at the moment. Joe, how would you like England to destroy him? Would you like us to get him in too early and ruin him, or starve him of playing for England and then sort of get him in very late in his career and ruin him that way?
Steve Harmison started positively, saying he should go to the UAE.
Mark Butcher
in
too.
Has he?
Yeah, he has, yeah.
So that seems a good way to ruin him. It worked with Rashid for a long, long time. Get him carrying a lot of drinks, demoralise him, rather than spending time in the performance programme and actually learning his game. So that'd be my choice.
That'd be the way to do it.
I'd like to volunteer to be ruined on the England tour. If they want to pick me, they'd just ruin me.
Yeah.
Because it wouldn't be any great loss.
No, that's what they need to do, find players to ruin that were never really going to be good players in the first place. No offence. Thank you for joining us for another All Out Cricket pod blast. Tweet us.
Ta-da.